Your frankness in terms of describing the generational difference is very important, Nigel, because that's an attitude that has persisted in the past and to some extent still exists with that generation. It's very important, I think, to put that on record and to learn from it. And I know that you, in particular, are very passionate about pubs as a social space, and you're very keen on promoting pubs where you can. So, just briefly, I was wondering how you think that, we can welcome women to pubs more and challenge that male-dominated atmosphere that has gone before, in our actions, because it has existed and it's important to put it on a historical record and to look at the historical record where it's been challenged. But how do you think moving forward we can create a more shared space?
Well, if you go back in time, the pub and those who worked in pubs used to hold certain respect and esteem in society. I mean, the old traditional Northern Ireland barman would always have worn a white shirt and black trousers and maybe a black tie. So that level of respect did exist there before, and that respect should be brought back in again, I think, and fed out to so that everybody is treated equally, both male and female. There are bars, and we all know of them, where you couldn't get a cocktail if you tried. But more and more bars are now, they're providing wine by the small bottle, wine by the glass. And it's not just all you can get is a whiskey or a pint of Guinness. And so, yes, provide the services for women, the services and the products that women maybe want. I've been in situations where, I suppose because of the nature of who I am and my own personal condition, but I would be looked upon as being very non-threatening towards women as someone with a disability. So quite often I can be sitting in the pub and maybe a group of women will sit with me, at the table with me because I'm not a threat. But as I sit there with them, sometimes I see situations where other men may approach those women maybe more aggressively. And in the terms of trying to interact with them in a sexual way. And I can see how it's quite disturbing to the women here in my company. But equally, there are other men who, maybe older men, yes, as you said, maybe older men who wish and hope that we can all be a bit more civil and more responsible in our attitude to the difference in sexes. So yes, I think that has to be encouraged, and I would take that back. That's the responsibility of the landlord or the barman. He has to sort of run his bar with a certain amount of decorum. We all grew up in the 70s when we had to learn to not talk about politics in the bar if you were in a mixed bar. We learned to do that. So maybe we don't need to learn to talk equally about the sexes. And those we learned those things because there were the rules that were imposed by the bar staff. You knew that if you went in and mouthed off about one religion or the other, you'd be told to get out. You should equally know that if you go into a bar and abuse in any way, verbally or otherwise, a woman, you'll be told to leave. And I think that's the bar, that's the nature of the bar, it's the culture of the bar. And the bar staff will do that. And some of them are doing that.
Well, thank you very much for your insights, Nigel. And as I say, Eileen Everson started the process 40 years ago, and it's still ongoing, I think, in many rural places. But things are changing, and it's great to get the historical perspective to learn about going forward. And I think that's a great point you make, that we learned how to be civil when it came to politics, and that maybe has to now, in the last 5 years, there's been a great move now to do that in terms of gender politics as well. Now, Nigel, you're a great man for humour. You're very funny, and you love telling a funny joke, as we got earlier. Although I can't remember that particular punchline. But how important have you found humour and storytelling for the atmosphere of pub conversation? And could you tell us a little bit about the history of pub conversation that you've not only experienced but also perhaps researched?
Well, as I say, I love the banter. What's the word we all talk about? The crack, yes, the
Yes.
crack. And the Irish bars are full of the crack. And tomorrow will be the day where you will hear more stories than any other. And St. Patrick's Day, you'll hear some great stories in your local bar. But what I would say is, think of it this, a lot of people watch the soap operas on TV, and in every soap opera you watch, there's a pub. We've got a Rover's Return, we've got the Queen Vic, we've got the Wolfpack, and that's because people interact in pubs. So to develop a storyline for a soap, you have to bring people together somewhere. So we do it in the pub, and that's where people tell stories. And the best times when people tell stories is when they use humour. Yeah, most of the stories you hear, you can't repeat, that has to be said. But and as I say, I told you that about the 93-year-old woman allegedly sexually active up until the end. But although I did hear that story expand, but someone said that, well, she died of COVID rather than anything else, but that leads to a whole other story completely. I'm trying to think of a story that I could tell without offending anybody. It's hard because, yes, that's the nature of pubs and being full of men. They tell raunchy stories, don't they?
Well, maybe we'll come back to that one, but it's interesting to get the perspective on humour and storytelling and how important they've been in the past. Now, you mentioned earlier as well pub closures. I think this happens in every community, whether it's a city like Belfast or Derry, whether it's Ballymena or whatever. And looking at some of the old news reports, I was looking at scene around 6 in March 1984. So this is near almost to the day, 27th of March 84. So it's almost to the day, about 38 years ago, doing the maths there quickly. Reporter called Sheila Cook interviewed a bartender called Mrs. Molly Baker. And she talked a little about her pub called the Canberra Bar. And some of the customers also reflected on the fact that they would miss the bar whenever it closed, and it was lost due to Docklands expansion. And that's just one case of many bars that were lost through gentrification and industrial expansion. So in terms of your community, how have bar closures affected the pub landscape in Ballymena, and what kind of impact does that have on the community? So I was wondering what your thoughts were on that.
I remember the age I am. I remember in the 70s, bars suddenly became one or the other. It's either a Protestant bar or a Catholic bar. And there was no room for a middle ground bar because that was a dangerous place. So that led to the first wave of closures, I think. You know, there was no room for a middle bar. But then later on, as we reached the end of the 80s, that came back with a vengeance. The idea of a common bar where people could mix again became the thing. So you got bars which were successful were those bars which didn't like to draw a distinction as to what they were or what they weren't, Protestant or Catholic. So that was one thing. Another thing I remember was in bars, in many of the provincial towns, we had the security zones where you weren't allowed to park inside the security zone, and you had barrels and fences and things put up. And the location of your bar, whether you were inside the security zone or outside it, that had a big issue. And bars that were inside just didn't work anymore because you couldn't park at them. And people still, despite all the stories, people still go to bars in their car and then drive home from the bars, having been there for a while, which is wrong, I know. But it happens, and that's just the way it is. I think we're seeing it again. We're seeing a strange thing happening. During COVID, a lot of people developed their home bar. People were building their little cabanas out the back and installing a bar and maybe a big screen TV. That was the death knell for a lot of pubs. That, I believe, will close a lot of bars in Northern Ireland, because why would you, if you can have all your mates and all your favourite friends around to a bar in your back garden, watch your big screen TV, play your jukebox and your favourite music, and drink beer, a pound a drink, why would you be bothering going out to a pub? So that will finish off a lot of bars. And a lot of bars had already moved out of town. The whole idea of the town centre down here during the 70s and the Troubles and whatnot, popular bars became bars that were attached to residential areas because it was safe. You knew where it was because you could walk home, all the rest of it. And I think I think bars now have to offer a different service. They have to be part of something else. They have to maybe be in a shopping area where you can go and have a bite to eat, sit down, maybe have a coffee as well as a drink. Young people don't drink as much as us older hellions did or do. So yeah, but bars are going to have to readapt and realize that they are on the last leg. There's a lot of bars in Ballymena now. Don't open on a Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Maybe open on the weekend, and that's not sustainable. But it really is an important part of our culture. It's where people meet. It's where things happen. It's where people used to sell things in bars. It used to be like a shop in many ways. I'm not talking about the bar itself sold it. People did trades and did deals in pubs. Now in Ballymena, the only deal you'll get in a pub is cocaine. By the way, that's another thing I shouldn't say that,
Well, let's go there.
should
But
I?
no, that's quite interesting. And bars, I suppose, were markets that were meeting places, and that definitely has been lost, I suppose. I was actually going to ask, so you talked a little bit about Jim Reeves earlier and the funny story involving him at the Flamingo and maybe the camping to several local bars. But many of Northern Ireland's high profile comedy performers in the 60s and 70s, like Roy Walker, Frank Carson, even female performers. There was a female performer in pubs called Marjorie Ray,
Oh, yeah,
and
no, I'm not watching.
it's great that you
A
remember,
part of
because
her.
I've done a lot of research on her, and you're the first person that can remember, because everybody says, she was this fantastic act, but she existed so long ago that, and she came from this big long line of comedy performers in pubs and in music halls and across the north. But many of them cut their teeth in pubs. Now that has died off, because comedy performers now go into in a completely different way. But back in the 60s and 70s, a lot of live comedy and music would have been featured not just in pubs in Belfast, but across Northern Ireland. So I was wondering how live comedy and music has shaped the identity of pubs in your community. And have you any memories of acts that you may have seen in pubs in Ballymena?
I can remember, well, I'll tell a story of more than them. There used to be a bar in Ballymena called the Abercorn, which was famous for the fact that it had go-go dancers upstairs. And this, a lot of people would look upon the whole concept of a go-go dancer as a bit, and it's not right, is it? But the truth of the matter is, the reason why they had go-go dancers was because they had a DJ who played in the corner and played records to a typically teenage clientele, and there was no dance floor that people couldn't dance. So, as an alternative to the dance floor, they built two small podiums where two local young females were invited to dance, and they regularly danced on these podiums, and they became known as go-go dancers. So, I think those are things that changed the whole nature of the performer and or a band playing in the corner. DJs and the ability to dance. The jukebox, the karaoke machine, those are the things that change those attitudes. Karaoke is huge in bars now.